Great, thank you so much. Oh, it's so good to be here, isn't it? Isn't it good to be here? Do you think? Yeah. I talk to my posse, you guys, because you clearly don't care. My name's Andrew, as Paul has helpfully said. Last Sunday evening, I was at City Praise and Prayer, or City Prayer and Praise, which is one of the things that I help organise across the city. And City Praise and Prayer last time, how many of you went? Any of you go? Some of you went, about half of you probably. There were over 600 people from probably over 70 churches coming together to pray and to worship Jesus and to pray for our city. And we've been doing that twice a year for more than 10 years now. And now we do it four times a year, because two times a year we also do it in kind of regional things where we've got four or five groups across the city that do it. And it's phenomenal, isn't it? It's a phenomenal, it's a bit loud, especially if you have to sit at the front like I do. But it's phenomenal time. 600 people going to a prayer meeting from other churches together in the same room. It's amazing. Some of you will get more excited about it in a minute, but don't worry. The first few times we did it, to be honest, it was a bit awkward. It was a bit awkward for a number of reasons, but really it was a bit awkward because you had to see people that you hadn't seen for a while because they'd left your church with having got the ump. And now I'm in the same room as them. And for me, I thought, this is bad. Then I thought, what's heaven going to be like then? So, and we had to get through that. So the first few times, we did quite a lot of kind of repentancy type things. And we had to get through it as leaders gathering together to organise these things. We had to be very careful about what we said and who we said it to and how we said it, so we didn't tread on each other's toes and do it too loud or too quiet, all that. We had to be really, really careful. But over the years, we've learnt to overcome those things. And we've learnt to kind of talk to each other and love each other and welcome each other and be pleased to see someone that you haven't seen for a while, even though they're in another church. And as leaders, we've learnt to trust each other and learn to be pleased to see each other. And so now those times are no longer awkward. They're joyful, really joyful. Really good fun. I love them. I love coming to... I've always enjoyed them, to be honest with you, but I love going to meet all different people again and again and again. And actually, this work that we did in the early days to kind of reconcile churches and church leaders and church members together is important, in part because we're going to get to heaven and we're going to deal with it anyway, but secondly, because it's a command of Jesus. Jesus told us to do this stuff. And so if we can't work it out in a city of 300,000 people, of roughly the same sort of people, how on earth are we going to work it out in any other context? So we do it because Jesus told us to do this stuff. And one of the places he told us to do this stuff is in the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew 5. So if you think about, well, there he is, that's a good picture, isn't it? That's AI, that is. Do me a picture of Jesus at the Sermon on the Mount. Up it comes. It's amazing, isn't it? It's entirely accurate. I've lost my flow. Right, so Jesus, okay, he's go back in the picture. I want the picture, it's good. There he is, first century Judea, surrounded by first century Judeans, who presumably are Jewish, Israelites, and they're living in a world where, as you heard last week from Ian or from me, if you were down in the other site, they are being kind of led by rules, and the rules are really quite hard and really quite constraining, and they're not allowed to do things, and they can't do this and they can't do that. And Jesus has just said to them, and they're saying, please, we want relief from these rules, how is it so difficult? And Jesus says to them, essentially, don't think I've come away to do away with the law, actually it's staying, but I've come to fulfill it. And he's going to start to talk about how he fulfills the law and how actually we are called as Christians not to live at the low level of the law, but at the higher level, far above. And so he's going to spend the next, he's not going to spend the next 6 weeks, because we're going to spend the next few weeks and looking at six sections where he basically says, you have heard it said, in other words, this is what the law is, but I say to you. And he doesn't say, you have heard it said, do this. I say to you, don't have to bother anymore. Every time he says, you have heard it said, do this. But I say to you, and makes it even higher. Okay, so this is the first one. You can turn it over now. This is Matthew 5, 7, verse 21. You have heard it said, it was said to those of old, you shall not murder. And whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone, oh, just stop there. Who is I? What's another name for Jesus? I am. So I say to you, what authority is he speaking with? Right, okay. Here we go then. But I say to you, everyone who is angry with his brothers will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. So if you're offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are going with him to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard and you be put in prison. Truly I say to you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. So there we are. Jesus starts saying, you've heard it said, don't murder. Well, I say to you, don't be angry. Don't be angry. You see, anger leads ultimately to murder. If you murder, you'll go to the prison, you'll go to the judge, you'll go to prison, you'll be killed. That was the law. Now he's saying, I said, you don't be angry. In fact, how is anger expressed? Anger, before it gets to murder, is often expressed in put-downs, in saying, you fool, you idiot. And Jesus is saying, don't even do those things, let alone not murder. Murder is far too low a bar. Oh, good, I didn't murder him. Well, that's not a good bar. Don't be angry, says Jesus. Don't be angry. You think murderers should go to court and be judged? Well, I say, even if you're angry, you're going to have to face it. So what should you do? What should you do? Well, it goes on and tells you. You need to sort it out. You need to sort it out. It's not good enough, he's saying, to come on a Sabbath or come on a Sunday, come on a Sabbath, offer your altar. So it's not good enough to come on a Sunday and worship when you've got something wrong. You need to sort it out. You need to sort it out with your brother or your sister. When do you need to do it? Well, right now, says Jesus, you need to leave the altar. You need to leave the altar and go and sort it out. Are you offset? This attitude in the end is quite hard, if you think about it. Because it's actually much, much easier to be offended than to forgive. How many of you found that? Oh, it's easy to be offended. I'm good at that. It's much easier to be offended than it is to forgive. But it's damaging to be angry. And it's restoring to forgive. And those of you that did Freedom in Christ last time, we did it, or the time before, we hold a whole session on this stuff. It's damaging to be angry. It's much, much better. It's restoring to forgive. When you go to Romans 12, you get this interesting comment where Paul says, if possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Because you see, sometimes I can forgive, I can try and sort it out, but you may not want to sort it out. Well, that doesn't leave me stuck. It just leaves you with a problem. Are you with me? So we have got, in fact, there was a sister not long ago, a couple of sisters in the church fell out, which isn't particularly unusual. People are always falling out with each other because we're living together in it. But a couple of sisters fell out. And one of those, they came together and they apologized to each other. And one of those sisters apologized and forgave the person and said, as far as I can, it's dealt with. Then the other one apologized, but every time she spoke to Janice, I don't know how Janice got involved, before she was involved even, but anyway, let's just talk to Janice, my wife, she would say, I've forgiven them, but I had to apologize, and I shouldn't have been the one that had to apologize. So she hadn't forgiven them at all. And she said, every time. Not only has she not forgiven them, but it was festering in her. Oh, I've forgiven them. But I shouldn't have had to be the one who apologized. I shouldn't have had to. Well, actually, Jesus says, you need to sort it out. You need to go. If you remember your brother's got something against you, you go and sort it out. Don't let it fester. But you can't necessarily control the reaction of the other person. Never mind. That's their problem. Your problem is what's going on in your heart. And this is where Jesus is starting to talk. Okay, easy principle. Shouldn't come as any surprise to those of you that are Christians. What's that got to do with a big issue? What's a big issue of that? It's a bigger kingdom. Big issue. Bigger kingdom. What is it? Well, I think the problem is it's not terribly common in this world to follow the commands of Jesus. Who knew? But we do live in what is, in the end, a very confused culture. In fact, we've got to the point now where we have culture wars. It's a thing. And we live in a culture where basically says we need to be fair to all. Let everyone be who they feel they want to be. Let everyone live out their truth on their journey. Let everyone be free and able to express themselves. But don't let your opinion offend me. Don't let what you say offend me. Don't let your thoughts and your ideas unsettle me. Don't let them make me feel unsafe. I must feel safe and accepted. So if you hold views that I don't actually like, if you have an opinion that I don't actually agree with, if you speak those views, I might be offended, so I'm going to cancel you. I'm going to cancel you so that I can stay protected, so that I can stay safe. But the thing is, in the end, cancel culture doesn't protect. It doesn't provide a safe space because it divides. It reinforces ingrained attitudes. It actually, under the guise of not inciting hatred, incites hatred. Because it becomes them and us. There's no attempt to reconcile. It's simply them and us. And so in that sense, it excludes this teaching of Jesus to a large degree. Not up front. If you say, well, you need to forget, oh yeah, we know that. But the attitude in the end is one of division. Because it's unsafe to hear something I don't want to hear. So in that sense, it makes people become angry with each other, or reinforces people's anger with each other. Because you live a lifestyle I don't agree with. Because you have an opinion I don't want to hear. Because you say something I think is offensive to somebody I don't actually know. So what are we to do then as Christians? Big issues, bigger kingdom. How are we going to live all this out? Well, I think the first thing is, let's not follow the wisdom of the world. Let's not follow their way of dealing with big issues. Let's instead follow
what Jesus taught. Which means when you know somebody has something against you in the church, go to them. And go to them in humility. Not with pride. Go to them with humility. Genuine humility. Go to them with an attitude that, I want to sort this out. You're my brother. I want you to be my brother. I want to be your sister. I want to restore our relationship again. Go to them to genuinely apologize. Don't be surprised that we fall out with each other from time to time. It's normal. We say things, we mishear, we unspeak, we don't speak clearly, we all sorts of things. We'll do all the time. But when it happens and you find yourself being angry with people, go to them in humility. Go to them in love. And start saying, hey, can we sort this out? Can we sort this out? And I thought, I want to just prove another reason it makes it hard for those of us from a British culture is because we're British. So, yeah, it's very difficult, isn't it? Let's face it, we don't want to make a fuss. Don't want to make a fuss, do we? Just let sleeping dogs lie. It's just them. Let's just not make a fuss. So it's quite hard for us to confront our feelings sometimes, those of us from a very British background. I'll play my I'm not properly British card in a minute, just to... But it's very hard. So I thought I'd have a look at an example of Jesus working this through. It's the night of Jesus' arrest. He celebrated the Passover meal with his disciples, which is a good celebration, roast lamb. Lovely. He's broken bread with them. Yet Jesus knows that he's about to be passed over himself. He's about to be not about to be passed over. Sorry, got that double wrong way around. Himself. He's about to face the most agonizing death. And he knows this. Now Peter's been with him for these past few years. Peter and Jesus, they've become great friends. He's one of Jesus' best friends. They're great, they're really close. They've travelled together. They've seen miracles together. They even walked on water together. Yet when Jesus most needed his friend, his bestie, what does Peter do? He falls asleep. He fell asleep. Jesus is utterly distressed in the garden waiting for his arrest. It says he was in agony. It was that hard. It was that hard. And Peter, instead of watching and waiting and praying with Jesus, he falls asleep. Like some of you. And so Jesus wakes them up. And says, couldn't you wake up? Couldn't you wait with me? Couldn't you pray with me for just 1 hour? My dear friend. So what does Peter do? He falls asleep. Again. Then Judas returns. He'd been at the early part of the meal. He comes back, but this time he's got all of the chief priests and the army, not the army, the soldiers and all that with him to arrest Jesus. So apparently Judas, who'd also been up the same length of time, he didn't feel the need to sleep that night. He managed to stay awake, but not Jesus' best friend. Not the friend who could see that Jesus was in agony and torment. He couldn't stay awake. But worse than that, actually, after Jesus is arrested, Peter denies even knowing Jesus. Imagine trying to do that on social media. You'd have to cancel and ghost and all sorts of things. It's, I know, I've never knew this guy. It's nothing to do with me. Three times. No, he's nothing to do with me. But a third time, he's getting angry with him. How dare, I know he's nothing. What are you talking about? And then the cock crows. And Jesus just looks at his friend. His best friend. If ever there was a reason to feel totally let down by your brother and to feel angry with him, this was it. This was it. When it really mattered. So, after Jesus is resurrected, what does he do? Well, he's about to go not to the altar to present his offering. He's about to go and actually be with his Father in heaven, face to face. But before he goes, he's got a relationship he needs to sort out. And so he goes and finds Peter. And he finds Peter with a few of the other disciples on a boat, unsuccessfully fishing. Managing to not catch any fish. That's where he finds him. So what happens? Well, Jesus does a quick miracle, gives him loads of fish. And then he makes a barbecue on the beach. And on the burning charcoal, he gets some of the fish. And they have breakfast together. Well, they've got breakfast together. Peter had seen Jesus and was so excited by seeing him, he ran out of the boat in the water and left his mates to bring in all the fish. And Jesus is making a barbecue. Breakfast on the beach. Lovely. Then after they've eaten, Jesus takes Peter aside. And he has what is probably one of the most beautiful conversations in the Bible. They have this honest discussion about their love for each other. Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? And Jesus entrusts him with the greatest of tasks, to look after his church. That, I would suggest, is a very, very long way indeed from do not murder. But it's the bar we're called to. Full of the Holy Spirit, full of the life and love of God, we can indeed learn to love each other, to forgive each other, to put things right when they're not wrong, to not hold hatred, to not hold anger, to not hold bitterness, to not say, you fool, you idiot, you twit. You've got no idea. We can learn to rise above those things. And Jesus doesn't just tell us to do that. He shows us how. He shows us how. It's not just simply a cancel culture. It's not simply a just, well, I'm a bit fed up with those people. I'll change church. That will solve my problem. And I've just kind of try not to go to too many city prays and prayers and catch them in the eyes. 600 people I could probably keep out of the way. He sets so much higher than that. Have a barbecue. And if you have a barbecue, pray for each other. Care for each other. Love each other. If you're coming on a Sunday morning and you remember, oh, do you know what, I'm going to have to face that person. I know that this person's got something against me. Well, go and talk to them. Go and talk to them. We need to do these things. I'm going to change to my Bible. So I thought we'd not just hear how clever Jesus is, but I thought as we break bread this morning, we might want to think about these things. Because if you remember in the letter that Paul wrote to the Corinthians, that church wasn't terribly different to us, really. He says, in the first place, when you come together as a church, I hear that there are divisions among you. I hear you're not all happy with each other. I hear you are actually in factions, little groups. And I'm not surprised, says Paul, because some of you are righteous and some of you aren't. So how would you not be? How would you? But he says, I hear you're in division with each other. So he's saying, when you come together to the Lord's Supper, it's not the Lord's Supper that you're eating. You're kind of, I don't know what you're doing, but it's not that. And then he goes on and tells them about how at that last meal that we've just been coming from, Jesus broke bread and he shared wine. And he said, this is us, we're a body. This is us, we're together, cleansed by the blood. This is us, we're made clean and we're made righteous. And so Paul goes on and says in verse 27 of 1 Corinthians 13, he says, so if you eat the bread or drink the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner, or if you've done what Jesus says, you've come to the altar to bring your offerings, if you want to use the Old Testament version of that, if you eat the bread, drink the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner, you'll be guilty concerning the body and the blood of the Lord. So let him examine himself then, and so eat of the bread and drink of the cup, so that you won't pour judgment on yourself. Can you see the parallels, what Jesus is saying? Well, you'd be judged if you're angry. And Paul's saying, hey, don't come to this meal with those attitudes in your heart. Because if you do, you're going to eat and bring judgment on yourself. But rather, wait for each other. Care for each other. Love each other. The communion meal isn't a meal only of reconciliation, but it is a starting point of reconciliation. And if you come to it unreconciled, Paul is pretty clear, that's not a good place to be. That is not a good place to be. So I want us to break bread. And I want us to break bread together as a body, as a whole. Now you may feel, as you're doing this, or as I've been preaching, I need to sort something out. You may have the opportunity to do that now. You may think, no, I need to resolve to do that later on, because it's going to involve a phone call of somebody on the other side, or somebody on the other side of the world, or whatever it might be. I think you can do that. And I think you can do that even in the attitude of taking bread and wine. And say, Lord, I resolve right now. I'm going to sort that issue out. But it's no good us having wonderful exhortations to be a welcoming, loving body, as Kath was giving us, and having these exhortations to purify our hearts, as Natalia was saying, if underneath it all we're saying, but I don't like you really, I'm cross with you really. Jesus is saying, no, you need to stop all that and deal with this. Then you can come to the table. So why don't we pray together? Is Steve around still? Well, there you are. Let's just stand together. Can we do breaking bread? Yeah, we've got some stuff over there, haven't we? Right, okay.